Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Verse 47. Pitaro Nava Vindatam. Krishna Dara Bhaktahitam. Gayante Adyapi Kavayo. Yaloka Samalapaham. Pitaro Nanva Vidatam. Krishna Dara Bhaktahitam. Gayante Adyapi Kavayo. Yaloka Samalapaham. Baham Pitarau Nanva Vindatam. Krishna Darab Hakhahitam. Gayanti Adyapi Kavaya. Yaloka Samara Baham. Vidatam Krishna Dara Bhakitam Antya Dapikavayo Lokasamavaham Vidaranangva Vidatam Krishna Dara Bhakitam Gayanti Adyapi Kavaya Yaloka Samalapaham Vitarananva Vidatam Krishna Dara Bhakitam Vyanti Adhyapi Kavaya Yaloka Samalapaham Vitarananga Vindatam Krishna Dararva Vekitam Vyanti Adhyapi Kavaya Loka Samalapaham Vitarananga Vindatam Krishna Darar Bhakitam Yanti Adyapi Kavaya Yaloka Samalapaham. Anyone else would like to chant the mantra? Shloka. Pitarananva Vidatam Krishna Dara Bhakahitam Ayanti Adyapi Kavaya Aloka Samalapaham. Thank you for chanting. Word by word translation. Pitarao, the actual father and mother of Krishna. Now, Not. Anava vidatam. Enjoyed. Krishna. Of Krishna. Udara. Magnanimous. Abhaka ihitam. The childhood pastimes he performed. Gayanti. Are glorifying. Adyapi. Even today. Kavayaha. Great, great sages and saintly persons. Yet. Which is Loka Samara Apaham, by hearing of which the contamination of the whole material world is vanquished. Translation. Although Krishna was so pleased with Vasudeva and Devaki that he descended as their son, they could not enjoy Krishna's magnanimous childhood pastimes, which are so great that simply by chanting about them vanquishes the contamination of the material world. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, however, enjoyed these pastimes fully, and therefore their position is always better than that of Vasudeva and Devaki. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. Krishna actually took birth from the womb of Devaki, but just after his birth, he was transferred to the home of Mother Yashoda. Devaki could not even have Krishna suck her breast. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj was astonished. How had Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj become so fortunate that they enjoyed the complete childhood pastimes of Krishna, which are still glorified by saintly persons? What had they done in the past by which they were elevated to such an exalted position? Om Agyana Tirmandasya Agnanjaya Shaka Chakshur Mitam Gina Tashmai Shidhvara Nama Shri Chaitanya Manavishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadavi Svapadandikam. Thank you kindly for letting me speak today, and it's a very special verse, and all of them are special verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. This beautiful verse gives us the goal of Bhakti Yoga. Our Bhakti Yoga path is to reunite with God in one of our eternal relationships. And Nectar of Devotion describes five relationships that you can have with the Supreme Lord, namely neutrality and servitude, friendship, parenthood, and conjugal love. When I was reading this verse, and I kind of felt like I was I started working on it on Tuesday late at night or Wednesday, and I kind of felt like I was lacking direction. But some points came up, and what intrigued me about this verse was the part about how chanting about the pastimes of Krishna, and chanting his name, vanquishes the contamination of the material world. So this is the thing that kind of stuck in my mind as I was reading the verse and trying to think of a good direction for this lecture. Chanting Krishna's name and about his pastimes vanquishes all those impurities of the material world, especially in Kali Yuga. There's so many bad influences, and virtually any any minute, any second, any moment, anywhere you turn, you can see something, you can perceive something negative, and everything is permeated by with something negative, something sinful, and we're not being negative or pessimistic here. I'm sure many people observe, even those who are not devotees, they observe there's so many bad things going on. You don't have to be really spiritual to notice how bad the situation is. But if you're observant and if you see what's going on with the society today, you'll be able to possibly come to the right solution. So when I was trying to work on this lecture and try to get a direction for it, something happened. It was the second time I tried to work on it and trying to complete it somehow, but there was still no direction, and I was sitting by the computer trying to do something, and my wife was preparing some Thanksgiving prasadam dinner, and my sons were playing around because they didn't go to school. They were just playing with toys, and my other son, my older son, Mikhail, was watching the Thanksgiving cartoons. And as I was working on this lecture, he yelled out like, "Ew!" And he just ran up to me, "Hey, Dad, they're showing turkey on the plate, you know, they're showing this." And I was like, "Oh, wow." Well, I came up to the TV screen and said, "Indeed, there was a turkey surrounded by the vegetables and potatoes." So I told him, "Don't worry, they don't know that, you know, eating turkey is not so healthy. Don't worry about it." And I think we switched the channel or something. It was a nice, actually, we watched it for a few minutes, and there was some history about how the pilgrims, early pilgrims came, and the American, Native American Indians and the pilgrims from England, they got together with the native tribe, and they celebrated, they gave thanks for the harvest for that year, and they rejoiced. The year was 1621, and the cartoon talked about how this Thanksgiving is celebrated throughout the world. They also mentioned that people are thankful for the blessings. The question that I had in my mind, like, who are we thankful to, and whose blessings, you know, but the cartoon did not mention that. What I did, I jumped on the computer and I got on the internet and did some real research, because it's been a while since my U.S. history class, and I forgot so many things. So even though the cartoon did not mention anything about God, to give thanks to God, or, you know, thanks for God's blessings, actually the original pilgrims and the native Indians, they give thanks to the Creator for the harvest, for the crops, for the rains. And similarly, the Puritans and the pilgrims who came from England, they were a strong branch of Christians who espoused fasting and prayer and giving thanks to God. So that was part of their culture too. It was pretty interesting that originally the spirit of Thanksgiving contained some of what we can say would align more with the karma yoga of Vedic scriptures, and it was more connected to God consciousness. So originally the spirit was there, saddened me about the cartoon that it didn't mention anything like that. So we can observe that in our culture, there's a divergence of spirituality, giving thanks to God, and you know, celebrating with family, getting together with family. Usually, I'm talking about in general society, it is not performed, you know, or giving thanks to God in prayer. It may be, but the general tendencies to these two paths are diverging, coming apart. Whereas the original spirit of thanksgiving was closer to what we can call, you know, karma yoga and working and giving thanks to God and for whatever crops, whatever results you obtained. That's pretty interesting there. And what's unfortunate is that since the spirit of in the West is diverging, the spirit of you know, spirituality and giving thanks to God, people are still trying to find happiness by focusing on the circle of family and enjoying working hard and enjoying the results of their activities, and that surely gives some type of happiness. Another thing came to my mind when I was pondering it is that Srila Prabhupada mentions in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 36, about different types of happiness. And the types of happiness, one is in the mode of goodness, one is in the mode of passion, one is in the mode of ignorance. And I just wanted to read just the English, maybe, of these three types of happiness that maybe many people who are outside of the circle of devotees are not aware of these divisions. They may not clearly see the consequences of certain types of enjoyment. But here's the first one, the first type of happiness that Bhagavad Gita describes. Oh, best of the Bharatas, Krishna is talking to Arjuna here. Now please hear from me about the three types of kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. First type of happiness, that which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. And next verse, that happiness which is derived from the contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. And finally, the third type of happiness, and that happiness which is blind to civilization and which is delusion from beginning to end and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance. So, it's interesting to see things. See the types of happiness. I wish people outside of the circle of devotees could clearly see these three types of happiness. And obviously, there are many scientists in the circle of devotees, and and obviously non-devotee scientists. But Srila Prabhupada mentioned many times that the Bhagavad Gita is the science of civilization. The Vedas are scientific, and it is a challenge to scientists whether devotees or non-devotees to actually construct an experiment in a controlled environment on the three types of happiness and with sufficient duration and eliminating certain distractions, conducting such experiments and see whether what kind of activity will give you what type of happiness, and what type of happiness causes what kind of reaction in your system. So that is certainly possible to conduct such experiments, and maybe someone has done that already. But Bhagavad Gita already has the hypothesis Krishna is the supreme scientist, and Bhagavad Gita has the hypothesis and thesis, and the experiment, the thesis is there, and then it is up to the challenge to people who may not be so sure about their way of action, and they may be frustrated with life. It is a challenge to them to test it out and conduct certain experiments, and maybe publish them. So people are more attracted to the type of happiness and the mode of goodness. And certainly, giving thanks to God qualifies as, you know, giving thanks to God and working for God certainly qualifies as work in the mode of goodness and beyond. It's even more than mode of goodness. Since already God is there and we are focusing and working for God. So that was pretty interesting. It came to my attention that the Srila Prabhupada and Krishna mentions three types of happiness, and it seems like our society is focusing more on happiness in the mode of passion, and a little bit of mode of goodness, a little bit of mode of ignorance, but people's tendencies are to separate state and religion, separate, you know, God, put him somewhere in the corner and give him, allocate maybe an hour per week, or allocate him and limit him to a certain environment, maybe a temple, maybe a church, maybe a synagogue, and in such a way God is fragmented kind of a place in the background somewhere, instead of at the forefront of our lives, which is kind of sad. But the fact of that, I was reading a little bit more about the history, and obviously most people know that what happened. You know, the pilgrims came and they had the feast with the native Indians, but as history shows, and history may be interpreted variously in different ways. American Indians were exterminated, and they were cheated and conquered, and the promised land opened up for other human beings. And this is the way of the material world, which is unfortunate, that one living entity's happiness usually comes at the cost of someone else's suffering. But devotees have something higher to look forward to, and our promised land is the land of Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan, where every living entity, every plant, every item in the spiritual world is conscious, and it's loved, and it's respected, and it's special. And nothing happens at the cost of someone else's happiness. Everyone, every living entity is entitled to happiness. So I'd like to read you a nice verse from Brahma Samhita that describes the promised land that Krishna's devotees aspire to. It's verse 56. I'll read the Sanskrit as well. Shriya kanta kanta parama purusha kalpata ravo Chuma bumishchin tamani ganamai toyamamartam gataganam natyam gamanam api ramshi priyasaki chinandam jyotik param apitat asvadyam apicham sayatra kshira ik sravati shurabhiyascha sumaham nimeshara dakya vavrajati nahi atrapi samyaha pajya svetadvipam tamaham itha galakam ithiyam Vedantaste santakshiti viravachara katipaye. Verse 56, translation. I worship that transcendental seat known as Svetadvip, where as loving consorts of Lakshmi in their unalloyed spiritual essence practice the amorous service to the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, all water is nectar, every word is a song, every gate is a dance, the flute is the favorite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty, where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk. There is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present without past or future, and hence it is not subject to the quality of passing away, even for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a very few self-realized souls in this world. So it's a very nice description of the spiritual promised land that we can connect with even while we're temporarily living here in the United States of America. We don't have to wait until we leave the body. You can actually, with the proper practice of Bhakti Yoga, you can enjoy that happiness and have some realization of the spiritual world just here. So Bhakti Samhita 15, verse 56. Another point that I'd like to mention is that we can present to people outside of our circle of devotees, we can present to them obviously the three types of happiness and how some experiments may be conducted, and you can prove that this type of happiness and engagement is not very, will make you happy at the end and make you frustrated. We can also mention Krishna also delineates, gives examples of very specific traits of behavior that our society should develop in order for us to be happy and taste some of the true happiness that that those who would like to come to the promised land of spiritual land need to have. And that is in chapter 12, one of my favorite chapters of Bhagavad Gita. I think we mentioned some verses last Friday from chapter 12 about different levels of Bhakti Yoga. Chapter 12, verse 13 through 20, and I'll just read some Sanskrit, verse 13 and 14, chapter 12, traits of behavior that endear us, living entities, to Krishna, that Krishna is looking at when he, you know, before he gives you mercy, or, you know, makes you progress more, he's looking for some qualities like that. So it's a good idea to practice them as along with our spiritual practice. Chapter 12, verse 13 through 14. Advesta sava bhutanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamanyeham karaha sama dukkha sukha kshami santushta satatam yogi yatatma dutta nishchayaha mayar pitamana buddhir yamad bhakta samepriyaha. Translation. One who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. The next verse, Yashma nadvijate loko, lokam nadvijate chayaha, harshamasha bhayadvegair, muktayah sachamepriyaha. He for whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, whose equipoise in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety is very dear to me. And the verses go on describing different different qualities of someone who would like to enter the spiritual land of eternal happiness. I'll just read the English here. One who never rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. And just read the final verse. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making it a supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. Very special. Special verses that actually list those qualities of behavior that are necessary to develop. And as you can see, Sadly, our society is going away from these qualities, trying to engage in the lower levels of happiness and the qualities that supposedly make you successful and happy are quite different from what Krishna describes in this verse, in these verses. Krishna is saying basically that instead of conquering, you know, physically others and, you know, expanding our territories in the material world, you know, expanding our businesses, expanding our country, we should conquer instead of other people, bringing them down and controlling them and taking away what they've got. We should conquer our own vices, and not even trying to conquer vices in other people, but trying to, that will come later, but trying to conquer vices in our own hearts. And then once you conquer the vices in your own hearts, then you can suggest to others and lead them better, and maybe point something out to them. But before that happens, it's good to lead by example and just conquer your own vices instead of other people. I think I mentioned most of the points that I wanted to mention here, about a little bit of a history of Thanksgiving and the original spirit of Thanksgiving, the three types of happiness that Bhagavad Gita describes, and the unfortunate tendency that our society is going in, which is to engage in the lower modes of happiness instead of the higher modes of happiness. And mentioning the promised land, the spiritual land that Krishna describes in Vedic scriptures, and by practicing bhakti yoga, how to developing divine qualities, that we can enter this land even in this lifetime. So in conclusion, I'd like to say that it is always very good to there's always a reason to be thankful to God. It's always a reason. And there is always a reason to work on something in our society. Our society is full of troubles. Wouldn't you agree on that? In my little conclusion here, I'd like to say that we need thanksgiving in the matter of thanksgiving in the original spirit, which is to give thanks to God. Prayers giving. We need to pray for. We'd like to vote for actually vegetarian Thanksgiving and that mentions God's name. And that would be very, very good. And we can pray for in such consciousness. We can pray for better leaders in our society, for better environment, and so many other things that our weakened society badly needs in this age of Kali Yuga. And this last week of Kartik ended, this was the last week of Kartik and the Thanksgiving week. Especially devotees are very thankful to Lord Krishna and the other devotees that they are still here in Kali Yuga. I can just imagine, can you imagine what this Kali Yuga would be like without Krishna's devotees and Krishna's presence in the form of his name? It would be just horrible. So we were thankful to Krishna and the devotees for being here in this age of Kali Yuga. Thank you for your attention, and hope you have a great day in Krishna consciousness. Pancha kala patrabhis jaga pasimhisa panhinam paganavi vashnavir namaha. If you have any questions, we still have some time. Anything that I missed, probably a lot of things, but maybe have some points that you'd like to discuss a little bit more. No questions, no comments. Okay, thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Yeah.